Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with pianist, arranger, band leader, performer, Roy Gerson. Roy has recently moved from New York City, where his entire career was based, to Sarasota, Florida, and we are unbelievably fortunate to have this remarkable jazz musician. He pretty much always knew that his life would include playing the piano, which he began to do at 2, and was playing in a band by the time he was 7, although he never had a plan. He did manage to have an extraordinary career. Roy gave me a copy of 2 of his CDs, Gerson Swings Disney, and At Gerson Person. I'm going to play cuts from both of these CDs. Right after the opening music to the show, I'm playing a cut from Gerson Swings Disney. It's Everybody Wants to Be a Cat, the vocal sung by Michael Feinstein. A cut that I'm going to play later, also from Gerson Swings Disney. This is John Pizzarelli singing Got No Strings. And right before the end of the show, I'm going to play Somebody Loves Me, which is virtually entirely Roy playing from That Gerson Person, so you can hear what an extraordinary musician he is. This is a lovely show because it's full of Roy Gerson's music and his delightful story. So hang on, here come the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not the person you think you have to be. not the person they told you you were supposed to be or had to be, or even the person they told you you were, because sometimes people get told things about themselves when they're young that is not actually the truth about them, and they believe it, and then they never get access to the real person. The Lynn Show is not even about the person you currently think you are. Because as I said, we can think things about ourselves that may be the truth, but not the whole truth. So the Lynn Show is about saying that although it is possible in childhood to find, to believe things about yourself that are not true, and to hide things about yourself which are true, it's not necessarily a life sentence. It is possible to rediscover who you really are. And if you want to talk to me about that, if you think there's a chance that you were cheated out of something that is really true for you, and you want to talk to me about that, then you can find me at my website. That is thelynnshow.com. THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. There's an email tab there. You can click on that and ask me any question that you might like, and I will be happy to answer you. As I said in the run-up, right now I'm going to play a cut from Roy Gerson's CD called Gerson Swings Disney, which is all Disney songs, obviously. And this one coming up is Everyone Wants to Be a Cat, with a vocal by Michael Feinstein. And right after that, I will be playing my interview with Roy.
Everybody wants to be a cat, because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at. Everybody's picking up on the feline beat, 'cause everything else is obsolete. Beware of a square when he offers to share his milk to sip. If it hasn't been tried, I suggest you provide your own catnip. I've heard some corny birds who tried to sing, but still a cat's the only cat who knows how to swing. A purr between two furry friends may be old hat, but everybody wants to be a cat. You provide your own catnip. I've heard some corny birds who tried to sing, but still a cat's the only cat who knows how to swing. A purr between two furry friends may be old hat, but everybody wants to be a cat. Come on, scat cat, turn me on. I'll take my horn and my best tone and blow a little soul into the tune. Let's take it to another key, modulate, then wait for me. I'll take a few ad-libs and pretty soon the other cats will all commence congregating on the fence beneath the alley's only light, where every night is out of sight. Cause everything else is obsolete. Cause everything else is obsolete.
Okay, so I'm here with Roy Gerson, who is relatively new to Sarasota, several months. And I'm interviewing Roy because he's a wonderful piano player.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I got an opportunity to hear him playing at Allegro Bistro in Venice.
Right, right.
And I wanted to interview him.
And
so,
you sat in.
And I sat in.
And sat
in. Yes, I did.
Good.
I did. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear that the art to which you have given your life and hopefully made your living is the art of music.
Yes, it has been. It is.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Okay, good. So I only ask one question.
Ask away.
Thank you.
Is that the question?
Yeah. And that is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first time in your life when you were drawn to music, thought about music, found yourself humming, any of that?
Well, I don't know the first time, but there was a piano in our house in Malvern, Long Island, where I grew up. And my grandmother, who couldn't see, she was blind, but there was a piano, and I would always knock around the piano. And then I just started playing tunes on the piano when I was about 3 years old. And I remember that, because I would play songs for my grandmother, like Mary Had a Little Lamb and Three Blind Mice and these little chopsticks.
Really?
And yeah. And
so now, you must have known these songs. Like they
well,
didn't.
I just heard them. My parents,
you heard them, right.
My parents would, since I could, my first memories were Mom and Dad singing hymns or little songs or... They had Broadway soap albums on the record player, so I mean, I was listening to Gigi when I'm 3 years old. You know, nutty things. My father's a jazz drummer, not by trade, but he's a great jazz drummer.
Uh-huh.
He was a salesman by trade, and he.
So they loved music.
They loved music. There was music playing all the time in the house. So I grew up listening and humming tunes, and there was being a piano in the living room. I was drawn to it. I just started playing, and a few years later, my parents started me with lessons.
Well, hold on. Okay, so did anybody else play piano?
No, my father's a drummer who had a band.
Mm-hmm.
He had a band called the Moonlighters, and they rehearsed once a week in my basement.
So On the piano.
There was a pianist in the band, Dave Goldfarb, great guy. He ended up being my attorney, but they were all Moonlighters because they did something else for a living.
Oh.
And he was an accountant and a lawyer. The same, he did both of them. And by the time I was 7 years old, I was sitting here with the band.
Oh my God! Okay, so you're 3, and you're plinking out these songs that you know to entertain your grandma,
yeah.
Right? And did you ask for lessons? Did they say, well, Roy, about lessons?
My sister, who ended up going to musical theater, my sister was on Broadway, actually.
Really?
Many years ago, in Good News, she was on. So she made it to Broadway, my sister. And so being 9 years older than me, she was already involved with, you know, the arts, being in junior high school and high school. So there was always music in the house. Robin was taking piano lessons from the same teacher I ended up with for 11 years. So Robin was teaching, was taking from Mrs. Freundlich, and then I guess I was 7, and I guess I just said to my parents, I want to take piano lessons also, and my parents said, sure.
Fine.
So I thought the coolest thing was holding a book of Bach. You know? I think that was so cool. 7 years old, I had no idea how to read this stuff. You know, but look, I carry it around. My parents said, this is too much, we've got to give the guy piano lessons. I mean, I didn't stop playing Bach until I was 12, but for 5 years I carried this book around, thinking I was a big shot.
That's so interesting that had meaning for you, right?
Yeah, it did.
That it looked to you well like it was cool, like it would.
I thought it was very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents, being that they loved the arts, my mother was basically she was a school secretary, but she loved Broadway show music, so she had all the albums. My father was a jazz-aholic.
Mm-hmm.
He played all the, you know, Buddy Rich, being a drummer, Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, Gene Krupa albums, Jazz the Philharmonic albums. So that's all I was inundated with.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but you picked up Bach.
I picked up Bach because I figured that was the cool thing.
Oh, amazing.
You know, that was because it was music. I couldn't read the music, but it had all these notes on there. I said, this has got to be hard to play. And I ended up playing the Bach Beret, one of my first pieces.
So you were really...
I loved it. I wanted to play the piano.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so you start at 7, and you start with classical music?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I had a teacher who, she was wonderful. She knew that I had good ears. I was lucky.
Obviously.
Good ears. And she knew that I was always already listening to people like Earl Garner and Oscar Peterson, not quite understanding how great they were at the time, but my father wanted me to hear all these great pianists and Fats Waller and everybody. And I would try to fool around playing that type of stuff when I was 7, 8 years old. So my piano teacher, being so smart that she was, she had me have a classical background, which I did. But at the same time, she encouraged my playing, trying to play my version of jazz, being 8, 9, 10 years old. So she encouraged it. She wasn't like, don't play this music. Come here, you're going to study Chopin and Liszt and Bach and, you know, the exercises. She was like, no, do your thing. Just practice my stuff once in a while. So that's how we lasted throughout middle school and high school with Mrs.
Okay, Charlie. So you're learning the structure. Learning the basics, right?
Of course.
And that she's teaching you that, and you're learning the other from listening?
Is
that what you're saying?
Just listening. Listening and sitting with my father's band.
So you said by the time you were...
Seven, I was playing
seven, in the band. You were playing with the band.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I mean, I wasn't playing all the songs, but for every once in a while, like I knew Satin Doll, I would know that song. I know, like, Skylark. You know these songs, of course. And I knew some of them, and I would sit in and play them, and they were great. My father's friends were great. I ended up becoming friends with them 25 years later when I was an adult. You know, they're still here, thank goodness. Most of them are still around. And we became friends. I sat in with the band and...
So you had this experience of playing with a band from the beginning.
Yeah. And they were pretty good. They weren't bad. They were a pretty decent band.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, I mean, that's a very special experience.
Yeah.
That most kids don't ever get. I mean, you get piano lessons, fine, you get piano lessons, you know, and you play. But until you get into high school or something, most kids don't get the opportunity to play in a band.
No, I was very lucky.
And it was fun.
Oh, it was fun. It was a ball. They encouraged it. I was having a great time. I played with them until I was 17.
Really?
The band was around the whole time. And Dave Goldfarb left the band, I guess, in about 5, 6 years later. I took over the piano chair. And through high school, I was playing with the band. We did these silly gigs, like Republican Party, Democratic Party. It didn't matter who we were playing for. We'd each get like $5 or $10 each, but we'd get to play.
Yeah.
And when you're 12 or 13 or 14 years old, it's a cool thing. And my father was really a great drummer. He taught me a lot.
Well, I think for them too, because they had to do something else during the day. They had a day gig, but they loved this, and so an opportunity to do it was important for them as well.
Exactly. Dad, Alvin, my father, he loved playing the drums.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Navy in World War II. He played in the Admiral's band.
Wow. Really,
that was his gig, musician, Stevens, first class, whatever, musician in the Navy. And just so happened he had to raise a family, and he didn't have the opportunity to go into it full-time, but he was a terrific drummer. He still is. He's still 91 years old. He's still around.
Wow.
But, he was a great drummer. And Mom just loved music. She encouraged it. She encouraged my sister. My brother, she encouraged, but he went into engineering. He's a scientist. he's a very, very successful engineer.
Well, music and engineering.
I know. That's what they say, the math and the music and everything.
Mm-hmm,
So Ira turned into an engineer.
Okay, so you're playing with a band. Are you playing in school?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I was playing, I actually played trumpet in school because the piano, there was no real piano for marching band, so I played trumpet. And I wasn't bad. I didn't love it like I loved piano. I could play the trumpet, I could play all the songs just like the piano, but it didn't give me that same rush of sitting down at a piano and being able to accompany myself. With a trumpet player, you had to have somebody play with you.
Yes.
You needed an accompanist to make it all sort of work. Piano, you didn't need that. You had two hands. You covered everything.
Yeah.
So,
also, there's that percussive thing with the piano.
Yeah,
I don't know if that had meaning for you.
It did. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. It's like, it's percussive. Exactly. I never really thought of that, but you're right. It's an exciting thing to just bang away at the thing and come up with notes.
Yes, exactly. Right. And make music at the same time.
Get all your frustration out.
Yes, right. But I'm going to say it's hands-on, but it is, right?
Yeah, it's
right. Hands-on. Yeah. Okay, good. So you're playing in school and you're playing with the guys. At some point, did you think, this is what I want to do with my life?
Well, it was never a choice. My parents never actually said, what do you want to do? They said to me once, this is sort of a nutty story, but I guess I was 12, and my mother took me aside and said, what do you want to do? You have friends whose parents are lawyers, accountants, and turns your father's a salesman. And I actually said I wanted to be a basketball player.
I see.
And she said, if you can't be a basketball player, and I kept saying, I want to play basketball. The New York Knicks were really big in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said, I want to play basketball. If you can't play basketball, what do you want to be? piano player. Be a piano player. So, and that was the end of our conversation.
I'm like, did you play basketball?
Yeah, I wasn't very good, but you know, you're 12 years old, and you know,
right.
You think you can play.
Right. Also, she was so glad
that I was a pianist as opposed to being a basketball player. She knew that. Yeah, nobody was telling my parents that I was going to be a great basketball player. Yeah. I was not going to be a Dave DeBuscher, who I don't know if you know, the New York Knicks, but back in the 70s, he was the king. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be that guy. As a piano player, they thought I had a better shot.
You know, I heard Bill Clinton tell this story. You know, he was a saxophone player,
sure,
right? And I guess he was a pretty good saxophone player.
He could play.
Right. He said one day he looked at himself in the mirror and he said to himself, he was like 17 or 18, I could play saxophone, but I will never be the world's best saxophone player. Mm-hmm. But I could be the world's best politician.
Yeah. Well, I never thought I was going to be the best pianist, but I had a much better shot.
than basketball.
Than playing pro basketball for the Knicks. It just didn't seem like, you know, that was in the cards. So my
okay.
parents made the
so
right
12,
choice.
Okay, so 12, you already know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So are you studying towards that? Do you know what kind of musician you want to be?
My parents, they never as much as they loved me and directed me in general in life, we never had a real discussion about what I was going to do for a living. It was a given.
Yes.
It wasn't like, well, you better study a lot. You better practice now for 2-3 hours a day. You better do this. You better do that, because in the long run, you have to be. What kind of pianist are you going to be? You're going to be a concert pianist. You're going to be a jazz pianist. You're going to be a teacher. You're an arranger. There's so many things to do. It was never brought up.
So what were you thinking? Were you thinking, or were you just going along?
I was just going along. I was playing. I was in the middle school. I was in the good classes, and then there was a special high school in Long Island. It was like Long Island's answer to performing arts in New York City. It was called BOCES, Advanced Something Gifted School, something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to that school half a day.
High school.
And by that time, I guess I was lucky I had good teachers there also who just figured I was going to be a pianist. We never discussed it. It was never discussed. My parents never sat down after that basketball story, never sat down with me and said, we need to discuss your future.
Wow.
It was never... I went to music school right out of college.
Whoa.
I know, just like, you know, we just,
yeah,
there
no,
was
so,
no stoppage.
No, I understand. So, but as you said, there are lots of choices about how to be a pianist.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea early on?
I wanted to play the piano.
Yeah, but what kind? Did you want
to
be?
I wanted to be a jazz pianist.
You did. You didn't want to be a concert pianist.
No, I didn't have it in me to be a concert pianist.
Even all that carrying around with Bach.
And all the practicing I did, I did play Liszt and Chopin, and I got into Manette School Music as a classical piano major, but I didn't have the same love that I did for jazz. It just wasn't the same thing. I love classical music. I play it. I practice it every day still. But it wasn't that desire that I needed to play the blues or play a 32-bar song or a Gershwin tune. Nothing I played classically matched it.
That's amazing.
As much as I love Liszt and Chopin, which I do, it doesn't compare to sitting down and just playing Honeysuckle Rose. It just doesn't. I don't have that same love.
No, it's wonderful. So you got out of high school and you knew that you were gonna go to college,
yeah.
Right? So where did you go?
Manhattan School of Music.
Oh yeah, right. And did you say you majored in classical?
Classical piano major.
How interesting.
They had a jazz department there. Now it was a fledgling in the early 80s. It was a fledgling.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm proud to say that it's considered to be one of the best jazz universities. It's music schools.
Mm-hmm.
It still has a classical, you know, forte, but their jazz department is considered one of the best in the country.
Yeah, but you didn't.
No, I wasn't the jazz. I played in the jazz band. They let me do that just because I could play, I guess. But no, I was a classical piano major. And,
this is interesting. I mean, you just figured you could learn more. I mean, I don't know. What were you thinking? Do you know?
I guess it's stereotypically thought that if I could play classical music...
You could play anything. Yeah, that's...
I don't know if there's really, really that much truth to it. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but that's how I felt at the time. If I could pull off a Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody, how hard can be anything else be that hard? Except unless you want to play like Artatum, which is impossible. But if you want to play jazz, if you can play Liszt and Chopin, you've got the technique needed. And that's how I looked at it.
Yeah, I would have thought that the sensibility that you need for jazz, the feeling that you need for jazz, you don't get that in the classical training.
No, you don't. No. My teacher at Manhattan School of Music loved jazz. I was very lucky. I picked a really great teacher who took me, and he loved Art Tatum. He admired the greatness of Art Tatum, the great pianist from the...
Mm-hmm.
solo pianist, the best I think ever, genius. But he appreciated how great Art Tatum was. He was also a classical pianist. My piano teacher stayed at the Paris Conservatory, one of the big Debussy interpreters in the world at the time. But he understood Art Tatum and Oscar Peterson and Earl Garner. So that when I was playing, he would come to hear me playing clubs in college, and he had this admiration, I guess, for all the guys, not just myself, but all the guys, piano players that, you know, that played with me, that he would hear play. He appreciated what we were doing. It wasn't like, oh no, they're jazz players, we don't, we're not going to talk to these guys, they do something completely different. Mr. Ulmer understood that, you know, that it was...
So you had that, luckily.
I was luckily also. A lot of teachers would have looked down and said, look, you're not going to study this. Or if you want to study, do it on your own time, but I don't want to hear about, you know, what you're playing, your flat and fifth chords, or your nutty technique that's different than the classical technique. Although I think that I do use a classical technique when I play the piano. That's the way it is. A lot of great pianists, you know, use
Can you tell me what the difference is?
That's hard to
Or do. Even what a classical technique is?
It's hard to explain. Classical technique... It's capable of running through scales and harmonic minor chords and major chords and arpeggios and thirds and sixths, all the technical things that are used in classical music, whether you're talking about Rachmaninoff or Bach or Brahms. They use these different techniques in the music, whether they be playing thirds,
right,
or sixths or octaves or tremolos or arpeggios, scales. When you're playing them in jazz, you're thinking of it at the time. So by having a classical background, if you want to play an arpeggio...
It just comes out.
Mm-hmm. It's not like you're not thinking about it so much, because, yes, I've had 15 years of playing Chopin and Beethoven, so that I want to play an arpeggio on the piano.
It's there. Yeah. It's great. Okay, so you graduate from the Manhattan...
No, I didn't graduate.
Oh, you didn't graduate.
No, I lasted 2 years. I found that I was making... I regret this. One of the few regrets I really have... I left school. I was making a living as a pianist.
Ah, where were you playing?
In Manhattan. I was doing a lot of club dates, a lot of private parties, weddings. I was playing a place called the West End Cafe, which was a really big spot for Manhattan School of Music and Columbia University. It was on 105th Street in Broadway, uptown. And I got in with that club, so I was playing, you know, there a lot.
So you were thinking you didn't need it anymore?
I was thinking I'll keep my piano teacher, which I did. I kept Mr. Ulmer for another 20 years. But I just figured, I'm fine. Keep the piano teacher, which I regret now, because I had to learn the hard way how to, you know, to arrange music and to orchestrate music.
That's the stuff you would have learned, if you stayed.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
I mean, studying the piano, I still kept Mr. Ulmer, I had the best teacher I could have.
Right.
But no, I didn't take the orchestration, the composition, the arranging, all these other, you know. I regret it, because I had to learn this on my own, and if I had taken that extra 2 years of study...
You'd have had it.
I would have had it.
Yeah, right. But you were a kid, and you were already making money.
Yeah.
Right?
And my parents, the same way, they weren't... They didn't say, you better finish school. My brother did, my sister did. We were like the first, you know, our generation to finish college, my brother and sister. But they didn't pressure me.
No.
They didn't say, you better finish school.
Are you the baby?
Yeah.
Yes, well...
My brother and sister finished college, and the fact that I didn't affect Mom one way or another.
No.
I guess she figured I was okay.
Yeah, well, and as, you know, I mean, I'll say it again, you were young and you were already making a living.
Yeah, I was doing really pretty darn well.
Yeah,
and I
right.
had an apartment in Manhattan.
Already. Oh, my gosh.
So Mom got me the apartment. I told her I wanted to live in Manhattan. I wanted to live at home because I was commuting from Malvern to Manhattan. And my mother, who was a compact collector, she collects, you know, ladies compacts. She's
yes.
like the preeminent collector in the country.
Really?
She has like 10,000 compacts.
She's
written 6 books on compacts.
You're kidding.
Yeah, Rosalind Gerson.
Amazing.
She's actually in that community. She's very famous. And she would go to all the antique stores in Manhattan.
Right.
And she went to one real estate place, and the real estate guy knew who I was working. I was working for Clarence, the name Saul Yagan. You may not have heard of him, but in New York he was a very regionally, the Benny Goodman clone in New York City at the time. And I worked for him. And this guy loved Saul Yagan. He got me an apartment on East 87th Street, and I just moved in. And
wow.
It was like 3 blocks from the club I was playing at the time. Just worked out.
You must have thought that you had arrived.
I took it for granted. You know, I wish I would have realized how great things were. You know, you want to look back. But I guess I did take it for granted. I was, you know, I was 20 years old, 21 years old. I was making a good living playing jazz clubs and filling in with weddings. Yes, I had the apartment on the Upper East Side. And Yeah, I guess.
You must have just thought, well, this is it. I'm here. I've arrived, right?
I just figured, no, it wasn't that I arrived. It was never a goal.
My parents
never said, well, how are you going to make a living? Let's get a plan how you're going to make a living playing the piano.
Right.
We never had a plan.
No.
So the fact that I was just making a living and paying the rent, it just sort of went along.
Yeah, no, I got it. I got it. So you didn't have a plan for what you were going to do or where it was going to go from there or any of that,
no,
right?
I just found I was making a living.
So what happened?
Then I was playing around New York. The band called the Widespread Depression Orchestra back in the 80s. They were actually a big regional band in the Northeast. And they heard me somewhere. They actually had me join the band when I was 20. And we toured the country for 9 months. So I went to New Orleans and Washington and L.A. and Chicago. It was like when you were a kid, I did appreciate those 9 months I was with the band. I realized how great this was.
So you're traveling the country?
Traveling the country and having a great time with some friends that I still have, 30 years later, I still have these friends.
From the band, you mean? Yeah.
And what happened was another decision that it ended up being a major decision for me, and there was a booking agent in New York City, Lisa Goodman, who was booking a lot of private events. Not just weddings, but society events. Corporate Fortune 500 company would have little events where they needed a jazz trio for Pierre Cardin or, a duo for Tiffany or that sort of thing. And when I wasn't working with Widespread, I did those parties for Lisa. And after working with Lisa for about 5 months, she made an offer that I couldn't refuse. She basically said, why don't you come into the business with me?
Ah!
And book music with me.
Wow.
And she was, she was my mother's age. It was like mm-hmm. we weren't.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But she was five. She was a kid. These days, that's a kid. She was 50. she was a kid, and her husband was a great composer, very, very well known composer, arranger. And they made the offer: why don't you come in? We'll have a salary, get a percentage. You'll have your own band, and we'll push it.
Right.
And I left Widespread. I made an album with Widespread. There was an album out there with me on it. And only thing I regret about, my timing wasn't very good, because 2 months after I left Widespread, they went to Italy. I missed Italy, I missed it by 2 months. I was playing parties in Manhattan, so I ended up with Lisa playing parties and booking events on 57th Street in Manhattan. And I did that for about 3.5 years until 86. I started my own company, Rutgers Music.
Because
I found out I was good at it.
You were good at it, right.
I was good at selling music. I had all the good players in town. They all wanted to thankfully work with my office. Not because of me, but I had the best players. So you want to work in a place where they have the best.
Right.
And I like to think that I had all the best young players in town, which I did.
Yes.
And I like to think that I was pretty, I was a union signatory. I did everything right, straight ahead. I was in management, but they got pension and welfare, all my musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So I did everything the way they wanted it to be done. Not that everybody in New York was doing that sort of thing, but I was doing the right thing. So I did that.
Well, you were a musician, so you knew.
Well, I knew that the right thing to do is be a, do union.
Right.
And get a pension. Because a lot of these players now in my age, and a little older than me, but they're starting to get pensions, and, it paid off.
Yes.
And the medical plan, I never liked the medical plan by the union. I always had fights with the union over it because it was a terrible medical plan, but I paid into it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So even while I was doing that, I was still playing jazz clubs. It was all of, we'd play the clubs on the side. And then I guess it was 1990, another important thing happened. I was playing a place called Zanzibar with my band, Roy Gerson Swing Tet. And we're playing, and we're doing all, Jazz the Philharmonic, Count Basie music, Duke Ellington, all that music with three horns. Great band. Randy Sankey, I don't know if you know who Randy Sankey. Jerry Nywood was in the band. Gary Kelly. In New York, these are, if this hits New York, they're going to say, oh my God, it's me. Just the greatest band there was. And we played. And one night, after the gig was over, somebody said, we think Tony Bennett's in the house.
Wow.
So I laughed. I said, sure. But what happened was there were pictures on the tablecloth. They were like, you could write on the tablecloth with crayons. Well, there were pictures of us. And Tony's an artist.
Yes.
And the next day, I had a publicist. I was smart about these. So I had a publicist even back then. And the publicist called and said Tony was in the house last with his female lady friend. And they want to manage him. So his wife now, Susan, who's now his wife but back then his girlfriend, managed me for several years.
Oh my
God!
Got
me my first record deal. That album, The Gerson Person, was because of Tony and Susan.
Wow!
And then I ended up touring the country and touring because of the album. And after that, I just was off to the races and just working everywhere.
Well, so when did you have time to learn arranging and orchestrating?
Well, it sort of came to me because, you know, if you play in a band, I arrange for the three horns, which is the trumpet, trombone, and sax, the three major sections of a band. We have a sax section, a trombone section, and a trumpet section, besides a rhythm section in a big band. So I always arrange for three horns, which is pretty easy, and one of each. But I just listened to music and just would study the Count Basie band and study Ellington's music and study Jimmy Lunsford's music and Glenn Miller's music. And I ended up writing some arrangements for Lionel Hampton. I wrote arrangements for Natalie Cole. There's a chart of mine in the Lincoln Center, Jazz Lincoln Center library.
Wow.
So I just...
This is the same thing as you did when you were a little boy and you just listened and you did it, right?
Yeah.
You have good ears.
I guess I have good ears.
You're right.
So it just so happened that, I just started writing arrangements, and they weren't bad. I don't think I wasn't a great ranger. I wasn't, Neil Hefti or Quincy Jones, but I could arrange well enough. I got the point across, but no, I wasn't this brilliant arranger. I usually let the arrangements go to Randy Sankey, who happens to be a great arranger who writes for the pops orchestras around the country. Mm-hmm. Since Eddie Pops in Boston, he'll write those big orchestrations. So he'll write the big band arrangements for me.
Okay, but so you essentially did this because you needed to do this. You had a band, and you had to get
I needed to do it, and I knew what I wanted to hear.
Yes, yes.
So by knowing what
otherwise, you'd just be dependent on what they played, what they decided to play.
Right, or even if I gave it off to an arranger to say, listen, now, here's the piano notes, here, do this, do that. I did that a lot.
Yeah.
I did do that a lot. I had Dan Levine, who's another great musician in New York City, trombonist, who's worked with everybody. One of the arrangements, I actually sat down with him and I said, I want to hear, this is what I want the saxes to play on the piano.
Uh-huh.
This is what the trumpet's going to do next.
Yeah, but you're arranging. He's just writing it down.
But still, he made it turn into some great arrangements for me. but that's how we would work.
Right.
We would sit down at a pad and just say, I want it orchestrated this way. And he knew my ears.
He knew what you wanted to hear.
So whether it was Dan Levine or...
It's the Gerson sound, right?
I guess it was the Gerson sound. Randy Sankey knew what I wanted to hear. And I was lucky.
I don't think it was luck, but okay. All right. So so you're touring and you're making albums, and this is the bulk of your career?
Bulk of my career.
Yeah, right. Okay, so how did you wind up here?
Well, we've been in New York for 20 years. My wife and I got married 3 years ago. We've been together for 20-something years, but we just decided at this point, you know what, let's just get married already. This is ridiculous. let's make my parents happy. And we got married, and my wife has a lot of family in Naples.
Uh-huh.
A lot of family. And my family, my sister still lives in New York, but my family's all over the country now. And Corinne said, let's give it a shot. Let's just go down to Naples. Let's see what's going on. Let's just see if it's right for us.
So were you still playing a lot, or you weren't playing so much?
No, I was playing a considerable amount. Choosing a lot more.
So you just picked up and left it all?
Yeah, I still have connections in New York. I still do a lot of things in New York. It's not like I can just say no more New York gigs.
I see. So you're running back and forth.
Yeah, I have to run back and forth.
Right, okay.
I have to go back to New York to play gigs.
I see.
Because I want to and because I have to.
Yes, right, I got it.
So I go back and forth.
And because you can.
And because I can, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back and forth, but... We want to make this a new base. We want to Naples and here in Sarasota, and I've been playing, working in Fort Myers. I've been playing in Punta Gorda. I've been in Port Charlotte. I've been working all these gigs around here. And,
mm-hmm.
People want to hear this stuff.
Yes,
it's a good crowd down here.
Yes, yeah.
I think that people really appreciate the real straight ahead jazz music that I play,
mm-hmm.
and I think that people appreciate it. And I think there's enough market down here to make, just be able to stay down here and not have to go to New York so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And plus the weather is great most of the time, except for the rainy season, which is ridiculous.
I know.
But I'm waiting for the good season. Everybody's telling me when it becomes in season, it's perfect weather here. We're waiting for this. I'm waiting for the beautiful weather. But it is beautiful down here.
Yeah.
And I've made some really good musical friends. Really, really terrific musicians are down here.
Mm-hmm.
Great players.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. When I first came down here, I wasn't sure. I said, let's just see what happens. And you meet people like Billy Marcus, who we met.
Right,
fantastic pianist. Joe Delaney, another fantastic piano player. And you meet these great, great musicians down here that are working full-time. And they also do the New York routine. They go up to Cape Cod, for the off-season. So there are a lot of wonderful players here. It's not like where I've come down and said, what's going on? This isn't going to work out. It's working out better than ever, just for the sake that everybody really can play down here.
Yeah, it's surprising, Sarasota.
Yeah.
And environs.
Yeah.
I guess it's South Florida.
Southwest Florida? That's what I keep telling people where
I'm from. Yeah, right.
Just good players. And they've been very generous.
Yes.
You know, they're generous. I mean, Billy and I, because we haven't met yet, Billy, but we've talked on the phone several times. We talk for half an hour on the phone just talking about music and what we've done. And he's been very generous in terms of giving me work because mm-hmm. he's so busy. He can work, you know, 8 nights a week if he wants to.
Yes. So but imagine that there's that much work.
There's that much work. Yeah, right. In season, he was told me last year he was exhausted.
Yeah.
Because he said he wished I was there last year because there was a lot of stuff he just couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so he's been having Joe Delaney, another great pianist, and there's another a few other pianists in town that are very nice. And Don Mopsick, I don't know if you're Don. The bass player has been terrific.
Yeah.
He's been recommending me for jobs all over the place.
And, yeah.
And he also is a world-class player.
Yeah.
World-class. He's one of the best that I've played with. And he's down here.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm getting to play with Don Mopsick. Why wouldn't I play with him in New York City? But he's down here, and I'm playing with this guy, you know?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So it's turning out very well.
Yeah, it's lovely. All right, so I only have one other question.
Ask away.
And it is... Having spent a life pursuing this work of music, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
I guess what I would say, going back to growing up, there was never a plan.
Right.
It's not like when I was 12, my parents said, let's sit down, how are you going to make it as a pianist? This is how we're going to do this. You're going to school, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You're going to have an education background, which I never got. I should have graduated college just to have an education so I could have taught. I'm not really qualified to teach in a university. I could never do that. But there was no plan. So it's hard to sell somebody about a plan when I never really had one. At the same time, you know, I've had times where I haven't worked that much. I had shoulder surgeries in both shoulders. I had two surgeries on each shoulder.
My goodness.
I had elbow surgery. I played very hard when I played with the band.
And you're somewhat slight.
Yeah.
So
just I've worked them out. I've had surgeries, so I've had downtime, and with those downtimes, you realize you're pretty darn fortunate.
Yeah.
Because there are all things I could have been doing for a living that maybe I would have been successful, but I wouldn't have. It wouldn't have been this. So I just I'm very grateful.
Say it wouldn't have been this.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been this. It would have been okay, I'm sure, but.
But
whatever plan I didn't have,
right?
This has worked out fine. And, I like playing the piano. After all these years, I still love going to a gig. It's exciting to me to meet new musicians or musicians I've known for 30 years and just sit down and play. There's this intense joy of playing the piano with musicians who can play, even musicians that aren't that great. Just playing, because of those down times I've had with the shoulders. You realize, wow, you know, this is really something to be able to get up and at 8 o'clock play somewhere, or around here you get start playing at 6 o'clock. I'm not used to that yet. You know, New York City gigs start at like 9, 10 o'clock.
Yeah,
they're ending. You know, at 9:30 it's over. I'm not quite used to that yet. Getting warmed up by about 9:30. But I can't say there was a plan. It's just that I'm grateful that this is the way it went for me.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Roy Anderson.
This was fun.
Well, it wouldn't be this. Roy Gerson is such a wonderful example of what it is that I am trying to accomplish with the Lin Show. As I told him, I interview people who make their living or their life within art. I do that because when you listen to someone who is making their living and or their life within art, their living or their life within art, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Roy Gerson discovered who he really was, playing little songs on the piano for his blind grandma when he was 2, 3, 4 years old. And he never lost that certainty, even though, as he says, he had no plan, even though he regrets that he didn't finish college because he had to learn on the fly, on the job, the things he might have had earlier on in his life. He never lost the certainty that what he had passion for, what he still has passion for, is playing the piano. He still loves playing the piano. He still loves going to a gig. He still loves playing with other musicians, even if they're not the best musicians. And Roy Gerson has played with many, many, many of the best musicians. So it is my hope that having listened to Roy, you are asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? did I find early on who I was, what I wanted to do, what it was that jazzed me, that made me feel alive, that put passion in my life? Am I living a life about which I can say, this is it? Well, again, if you are, hooray, lucky for you. But if you are not, and as I said earlier on in the show, if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelinshow.com. So now I want to play another cut from Gerson Swing's Disney, and this is Got No Strings with a vocal by John Pizzarelli, and of course Roy Gerson on piano. Quickly, I am going to tell you the other musicians on this CD, because it is a who's who of great musicians. Terry Clark, Joel Helleny, Gary Keller, James Korber, Jay Lionheart, Ken Poplowski, Bucky Pizzarelli, John Pizzarelli, Jim Pugh, Randy Sankey, Saporito. And the vocals, not only Michael Feinstein and John Pizzarelli, but Rosemary Clooney, and doing backup, Corinne Manning and Carolyn Lionheart. This is the Disney Swings Gerson CD. And now, all of those remarkable players, and with a vocal by John Pizzarelli, singing Got No Strings.
I got no strings to hold me down, to make me fret or make me frown. I had strings, but now I'm free. There are no strings on me. I've got no strings, so I have fun. I'm not tied up to anyone. How I love my liberty. There are no strings on me. Well, hi-ho the merry-o, I'm as happy as can be. I want the world to know nothing ever worries me. I've got no strings to hold me down, to make me fret or make me frown. I had strings, but now I'm free. There are no strings on me, yeah.
Something from this show that you can use. something that inspired you to ask yourself, can you say about your life, this is it? Maybe it was just enjoying this delightful music. So we're going to go out on Somebody Loves Me from, I believe this is his first CD, That Gerson Person. And the musicians on this album are Frank Vignola, Lynn Seaton, and Duffy Jackson. But this cut is almost entirely Roy. And, well, I don't want to say anything more about it. You'll hear it, so here now, Roy Gerson playing Somebody Loves Me. Thank you.
see I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. Not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So